It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 326.
What's going on, guys?
We've got a
fist pumper in the house.
Fist pump. It's not very LinkedIn of you. We've got String New, and you may recognize her from blowing up on LinkedIn. That's how I first saw you, anyway.
Like, you know, we're not even friends.
Well, that's what I was saying to Tommy. Yeah. You added me, you connected to me on LinkedIn, but I see your content constantly.
Yeah,
on LinkedIn.
I know how to like growth hack the algorithm.
Yeah.
I knew that. Well, the easiest way is when you have second or third parties comment into it. Mm-hmm. So if you comment in my videos, what's going to happen is people in your network is going to see my content on their feed.
There's a few things that we need to work on with Josh. He was not actually accepting people who were requesting him if he didn't know them, which I was like, it's kind of counter to networking.
Yeah, it's not Facebook.
Yeah.
It's not Facebook, okay?
Well, so what's your rule on accepting? Will you just accept anyone? How many SEO experts do you have on your LinkedIn?
Not that many. Actually, like I have 30,000 followers, 4,500, or maybe more now, 4,500, including you guys, on LinkedIn. So I only have connection list of less than 4.5.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got the followers, then the connection list.
Yes, because I made that switch really clear, really straight away. And people ask me, it's like, how come you don't add everyone? Because it's like a black book.
Yeah.
And you could actually download those like emails as well and then spam them if you want to, but that's illegal.
Interesting.
But so you might take you up on the instructions.
But you can, so you... Can you export within LinkedIn? Do you have to use like some?
You could export it. Oh, yeah. A lot of people don't know all these little hacks. This is what happens when you like just hang out on LinkedIn all the time.
Yeah. Just full nerding out on it.
I know.
But you're not like full business. Like you're not the sort of the classic. You know, you're You're a fried chicken loving, quirky person like me. Like I feel like I'm not very LinkedIn.
What
friendly.
Is a LinkedIn? Okay, let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the LinkedIn perception?
I think the perception of LinkedIn is corporate, pretty sort of like it's the anti social media in regard to like it's not, you know, there's a formality to it. And if you try and go to Facebook, whatever that means, people will be like, I didn't sign up for this type of content.
No, they don't have to sign up.
Exactly.
500 million. Maybe 500 million users on LinkedIn. I'm not going to expect to be popular with everyone.
Yeah.
But I just want people who vibe with me because they protect me from trolls.
Is trolls a big thing on LinkedIn or no?
Well, like it depends on the way you do it. I love them because I could throw fried chicken at them. So like when I get someone who disagrees with me, I connect vegans with vegans together.
Yeah.
And then make them chat. What they do is like they talk to each other and it games the algorithm.
Yeah.
Or I throw them fried, because also you have to remember like you're leaving digital footprints behind. So I always like go back to like PR moves like, you know what's original? KFC.
Yeah.
Within how long of every conversation is the word fried chicken mentioned?
Oh, like every day I get like about 3 people talking to me about it at least. Mm. And so it used to go like last year was 1 per day. Now it's 3 times per day.
Okay. So are we the first? Because it's
for the day.
It's fairly early.
For the day.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've still got 2 more to go.
It has cut through.
I mean, Josh loves. You've got a great content mind, which is how I guess you've been able to build your following. Josh talks a lot about things being sticky and things we do that sort of have, I guess, traction. Sticky is a great word because you can see it sort of sticking to people's heads in terms of what they remember. And fried chicken is something that is sticky.
Yes.
Depends how it's cooked.
True.
Super relatable. The idea of personal branding or logo is to make it relatable. And a lot of vegans will hate me, but I don't mind. You need people who hate you. People have this concept of haters, but I just like dealing with trolls because they always give me the best lines. So I get inspired by them all the time. So, you know, it's like a love-hate relationship, but I love them.
And so this fried chicken thing, just quickly, where's that from? Other than a love for fried chicken.
I have to give a massive shout out to my best friend, Belva, because she loves fried chicken. She organized fried chicken parties and we kept on not doing it. And then I brought the idea outside of our circle and she's like, I hate you. It's like, don't worry. If I ever write a book, I've acknowledge you in that.
We used to do Conspiracy Jimmy, a friend of ours within the proximity here. You may not see him because he is a conspiracy. But him and I used to go. I remember when fried chicken came to Melbourne in terms of like those gammy fried chicken.
Yeah, Korean fried chicken and beer. Excellent.
Is that your background, Korean?
No. I'm doing the awkward pause because
why?
Because it's like
it's got more cut through if you do it like that.
That was a nice awkward pause. No, I'm a Vietnamese.
Okay, Vietnamese.
Nguyen is a popular name.
Yeah.
It's like we're like the white version of Smith. Oh, yellow version of Smith. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Nguyen.
Is fried chicken big in Vietnam or
it's
no?
It's big in everywhere in the world when you think about it. Every culture. Like one of my biggest dreams a couple of years ago was to try every fried chicken in every culture. Because every culture have their own variation of fried chicken.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I just for fried chicken. People don't get it. Some people get it. But they eventually, every time they see KFC or fried chicken, they think of me. And that's like...
The stickiness, the branding thing.
Well, it's accessible, isn't it? It's like it's something... Chicken? It's like, well, the fried chicken, it's like it doesn't matter where you are on the spectrum of, you know, like how you're doing in the world. It's like fried chicken is fried chicken. Like it's not like, I know in New York they did like a gold, did you say?
Yes,
like
the gold and then everyone sent me that link. Like I had it like three times. I mean, a lot of people sent me like, when are we going to try this $1,000 thing? Yeah. Can you use your influencing powers to like see if you could get into it? I'm like, I'm laughing because if anything, it just made people think of me as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
Well, you need a crowdfund to actually have it happen.
I actually think that's doable, but I think they dropped down because it might look cool, but the flavor probably wouldn't taste good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like you're buying hype. Like that is like the ultimate hype, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like we're going to put this thing on it to make it like less accessible for people.
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually taste great any better.
Well, the thing is like I used it as like a community tool because I get a lot of inbound. So anyone who uses fried chicken in my messages, I know they like listen to my content or know my reference. Mm-hmm. Mm. So they drop fried chickens and I love fried chicken too. And it's like, that's my person.
Yeah.
So I could be the nicest person to them.
I tried to be the hot choc guy. So when I was, I did a trip around the world with Invato where I was filming and I tried a hot chocolate everywhere I went, which was like a great idea, but it's not that sustainable in regards to like from a lifestyle point of view. Because
you're more the squeegee guy now than the hot chocolate guy.
Yeah. Which chicken, is a whole other thing.
Fried chicken is like, I do it visually because I don't have to get fat all the time.
Yeah. Well, because there's a decent amount of protein there.
I reckon you'd struggle getting fat anyway.
I do. My metabolism.
Yeah, it's too fast. The fried chicken can't even do anything. Stringer, we were talking before about where you grew up.
Yes.
In Melbourne.
Yes.
Out west. Oh, is that west? Is it
Flemington? Is Flemington down west or like inner west?
It's definitely inner west because it's not that far from the CBD.
If it's inner west or west, it's still west though, right? I guess.
The guys were asking me where I grew up, and I told them I grew up in the Commission Flats because my mum was like, her parents were refugees. Mm-hmm. They escaped the war in Vietnam. Like most first generation Vietnamese are generally like refugees, but I grew up here and was born here. So we get chucked into the Commission Flats, all of us.
And so what's the experience you now versus your childhood? What can you reflect on now? What was it like?
It's the same.
Yeah.
Well, commission housing in Australia is public housing.
Yes,
it's
public
supported.
Housing. Oh, but I guess like a lot of people when they hear that, they feel like, oh, poor you. But I'm like, I had the best childhood.
Yeah.
Like I ran amok. I played with the boys. Like they taught me how to play soccer. Mm. They learned to taught me like self-defense in many ways. So my street instincts were from there. So I trust my instincts from that.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys will look after me anyway. So people ask me, it's like, you know, did you have a poor childhood? And like, no, it's the best childhood. I was laughing all the time.
Yeah. Because I guess like there is the one thing I think about is like mental health and mental illness, like just going along, say, near Victoria Street or certain sort of areas where there are commission flats in Melbourne, they are like hot spots for
crime.
Yeah. For crime, for, you know, drug use, for mental health type of issues. And so essentially all of that sort of coming together, do you think has that changed? Like when you were growing up, was it the same type of experience?
So if anything, I feel more empathetic because I could relate to the situation because at the moment it's the Sudanese community in that situation. But like education, I think my mum drummed into us because like she was a single mum taking care of five kids as well. So she drummed into us like education is like our route to escape poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister works for the army as well.
Oh, cool.
And me, like we all like hanged out at the library. So like my love for learning, like my mum was super resourceful. So she chucked us into the library. the librarians loved us.
Yeah.
So what I did was like hanged out with Sigmund Freud and learn about psychology when I was like 12 years old.
God, I don't think I could take my kid to the library. He's too noisy. He's so noisy. I mean, he's only two.
Yeah.
But he's just started screaming.
Oh, well, we were primary school and my brothers, they love chess. So that's where they play chess and like they're really good. I can't compete against them. But I think the librarians love us because they never kicked us out.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, there's definitely, I was speaking with Scooter Derek, who's been on our show a few times. His partner, she is like a librarian, and talking about how the shift between what libraries used to be versus what they are now, they're like positioned as community centres.
Yes.
It's an open place where people can go and, you know, not only access things like, you know, the internet, but also a place that you can sort of find quiet time for study.
Yes.
And things like that.
And I think that's the library has transitioned to it because Google is the library now.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I think like there's a lot of like shit content out there as well.
Mm.
To see in there because there's a lot yeah. of like, you know, and that's what's happening on LinkedIn now is like people are pushing out really generic content out there with no value or like they're doing it for the sake of values. And now people are like becoming LinkedIn influencers and getting really caught up with the candy game of like likes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're becoming the new Instagrammers.
How did that happen? How did you end up deciding as LinkedIn as the game that you wanted to play?
Well, I went on to video because video, I find, is going to be the tool that's going to amplify everything. And most of the consumption on the internet is through video these days, right? Including Netflix, YouTube and things. And I knew that video was going to be the trend that we're going to be, that I need to jump onto. So I started using Meerkat. Have you heard of Meerkat?
Mm. Yeah, I remember Meerkat.
Meerkat died in 6 months.
Well, it was Periscope and Meerkat side by side. I feel like Gary Vee was a Meerkat guy.
Yeah, maybe. He invested in it. So Meerkat actually... like if you like technology, integrate it so well into Twitter, like beautifully. Like Periscope doesn't even integrate it to Twitter like in the first couple of years.
Which is funny because Periscope is now owned by Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah. It's still around?
Yeah, it's still
Periscope around. Still around. Meerkat, well, they actually came out, I think it must have been 2014.
Yes.
And they came out at South by Southwest. Yeah. I was there that year and it was...
crazy, right?
Yeah, it was like the two platforms were sort of being used side by side.
Jules Lund told me, he's like, get on it, mate.
Yeah,
gotta get on it.
But I was really thinking that Meerkat would like get bought out by Twitter, but they're already like signing conversations with Periscope. And then when Meerkat came out, that's when like Periscope came out because they had to because they saw the momentum they're going and squished Meerkat. So I grew like...
a little meerkat. I was just picturing a little meerkat getting squished.
The best logos as well. And now like, I have like one logo where I make a joke that it's dead, you know, cross-eyed. but I grew 44,000 followers in 6 months and like top 20.
Wow, on Meerkat.
On Meerkat.
What were you doing?
Just streaming every day.
Just being you?
Yeah.
And so what did you find from is that a case of first platform? Like, do you feel like
it's always first movers, right?
Yeah.
And that's what happened on to LinkedIn. I went on to Snapchat and I was there and we won a Snapchat award for best Snapchat channel for women in tech. So I was a producer for that.
What was that channel called?
Women in Tech.
Yeah, cool.
But it kind of, it dwindled a little bit. Now it's on Instagram. But saying that, like, I was trying to monetize within, like, 6 months of like, going on to Snapchat, I realized it was really hard to monetize because Australians... business is quite conservative.
Mm.
If I was in America, like, voila, but if it was in USA, like, I couldn't monetize it. They prefer Facebook Live over Snapchat.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, isn't, like, Snapchat, you can't see your following?
Well, like, you still have a community because, like, it's just a different stickiness. Like, I developed content there. Like, people loved it. I have, like, people comment, like, messaging me. It's like, Stream, where have you been? I love your Snapchat channel.
Yeah.
It's almost a bit more, like, direct sales as well.
Like, it's like, if you're not hearing back, you don't know, right? Yeah. You can see that, like, how many people have viewed, but if you're not having interaction, I guess maybe that's the gauge, right?
Well, like, it's just business. But then I realized I was more... the day that I was like, I knew Instagram was going to rise and I knew it projected it was going to like continue that thing is that when I wanted to like cut down Snapchat and switch to Instagram, when LinkedIn knocked on the door and said, Stream, I love your content. Would you like to be a beta user for a video on LinkedIn? I'm like, hell yeah.
Oh,
and then
great.
I went viral.
Yeah. Well, I remember when the LinkedIn video stuff was happening, and I
where the fuck was my knock, by the way?
Well, I think the thing I was knocking. I remember speaking.
You were knocking on their door. No, you're going to have them knock on your door.
No, yeah, no, I was knocking on your door, Tommy, which was completely the wrong door. If we learn anything,
I didn't even have a door at the time.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just like I was ringing a doorbell. You had ring. You're just looking, not answering. But the I remember speaking with Jules, and I went in one of my sort of manic modes where I'm like, this is happening. And at the time, you could only upload through mobile or whatever. So I was looking at, I thought doing a LinkedIn only series and building all that sort of thing. But there's so many people who have these ideas and theories and wants to be first to market, but you're actually someone who did it. What was the daily practice that you sort of, you know, started on to see that grow?
Start 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, literally, like Meerkat was like my structure for things because I created a framework for it. Create content every day. Mm. Be authentic as yourself, but you have to know your vision, your values. Oh, hang on.
You got your six V's.
Seven V's.
Seven. Was it always been seven? Or
no, it started off with four. Then it evolved over seven.
One of them's a German word. So
Volt. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, high five. You actually listened to me.
I'm lost. Are we talking about the Mighty Ducks?
So over the course of the years, I've been developing my personal brand and I created a framework around it. And it's been something that I've been super consistent about. And people pay me for this now. Amazing.
Are we getting this for free right now? Is that what's happening? Yeah. Shit. Yeah. Oh, my
Tommy's
God.
Life. Are you ready?
Yeah, here we go.
So think of it like...
When she's got a little pay pass thing. It's already taken money from my...
Yeah, the square. We'll just have to...
So, you know, Tommy, you're like, you have to listen to it. Just say, yep, I got that. No, I don't got that. Okay. Okay, I need to work on that. So think of it as an audit list.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So do you have a vision? A vision that like... it's like almost your legacy, your North Star, something, a bigger purpose than you, but allows you to fulfill your vision for the next 10 years.
Yes.
Cool. Okay, what is it?
I got that. It's this Oh my God, this is amazing. The Daily Talk Show. It's the business I have with Josh.
Oh, that's a goal. A vision is like...
Our vision though is...
It's like almost like your North Star. Like what is your purpose? It's like, you know, it's like for like Elon Musk is to... bring humanity outside of it.
Shit, I'm not... Mine just seems petty compared to that. No, it's to create an environment where I'm surrounded by people that we can all bring each other up. We're all creating. We've thought a lot about this stuff.
Yeah, I think part of it too is for our audience, it's realising that the future of work can be a bit isolating. Mm. It can be like we're spending a lot of time on Slack. We're spending a lot of time on our own working from home.
Yeah.
The Daily Talk Show is something that... whether you have a tab open on your browser or, you know, you're going for a walk, you know, through a podcast app, you can feel like you're connected and have that daily touch point.
So I'm going to like streamline that. So you want people to feel connected.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the future of work. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to.
Yeah.
So that's the vision you're going for. Mm-hmm. The V is values. There's two types of values.
Yep.
There's like business values because then you know you have to make money. I always believe that. The second value is your personal framework values. It's like it protects you from, it allows you to say yes and no and it keeps your integrity.
Yes.
Because personal branding at the end of the day or branding is walking in your own truth every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a lot of respect if you could like do that every day, right? And the third one is Vogue, which is a German word for people. It's like Volkswagen.
Yeah.
So who are the people that you're trying to serve?
Mm.
And a lot of times, anything you want to go even more like, you know, extra below is like, who are your partners?
Yeah.
Did you learn German or how did you get to
that? Okay. No, but actually, my friend gave me that. It's String, I found the word for you. It's like, because everyone's all about collaboration.
Yeah.
So, like, community, like, there's a word.
Well, how do you spell it?
V O L K.
Volk.
Volkswagen.
Volkswagen.
Yes. Yeah. It's got cutthroat. Yeah. Having a word that's outside of English, I feel like there's a lot of...
Yeah, it makes you ask questions.
Yeah,
yeah,
I like that.
But the fact that you remember is awesome.
Das ist gut.
Yeah. What is it, Vogue? Visuals. So what is your visuals? So like the stickiness that you guys were mentioning.
Mm.
For me, it was like fried chicken, even my glasses, my black hair, like how you look visually, presenting-wise. Sometimes people knew simple things like what colour you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I heard like he likes wearing black and you like wearing white.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we've kind of just cemented that on the show, which has been, it's been good. I guess it's like I just didn't want, because he wears the same thing every day. I actually come usually in a different colour. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I can't be – maybe I could start doing something different.
That started off – Tommy started pure white and now it's slowly working towards sort of a more of a cream.
The white balance is picking up as crystal clear white, mate. Yeah, exactly. It's called I need a bit of nappy sand. We need some integration here, nappy sand, please.
No, but the visual stuff makes a lot of sense. Like I noticed that Dr. Jason Fox, who we've had on the show as well.
Shout out to him.
He's amazing. Yeah, he's awesome. He talked about like
What that was.
you were saying something. You stopped. What?
Yeah. He talks about like the psychology of the things that we wear, and like by changing the things that we wear, we can actually change our like even the way that we present ourselves and how we communicate. That's a part of the reason why I went sort of minimal, got the sort of like Steve Jobs glasses, was the idea of like I used to wear snapbacks and being sort of like the classic creative with a big neck beard. And I still fall into that. But a part of me was like, I want to also go to meetings and not be put into that sort of box. I wanted to sort of move beyond that. Mm. Not everyone is as like, well, you're right.
I'm such a small person. My face is so tiny.
Your headphones just fell off. I was more worried about hair's you coming falling through. Off the...
You got to keep that branding.
Yeah.
The visual. Dark hair.
But so, I mean, a lot of people don't think about it. How much were you thinking about your visual?
Well, like, I think I've inspired a lot of people to use emojis on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Do you have emojis in your name? Can you have emojis in your name?
Well, I asked, like, a trademark lawyer about that.
Yeah.
And he said no.
Oh, interesting.
But, like, I was like, can I use, like, SFC as leverage of KFC? He's like, yeah, you can do that, but not the same color string. And
Ms. 97, can you look up who created the emojis? Because I don't think it's Apple. I think there was a different business in Australia.
So, like... emojis, they kind of made it open source and I think they just decided, well, I have to look into it, but I do think that emojis has become like an everyday lexicon. Mm-hmm. One of my girlfriends, she's a communicator, she says like, I'm pretty cold on emails or like communications because I don't use enough emojis to make it look like I'm warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, yeah.
She says like, I'm very cold. And it's like, whoa. So people do like emojis in their conversations.
Yeah. Well, some people like...
that emoji, no.
The habit that I really don't like is where people won't say hi. They just say your name and then they do a comment, you know, like in email. And that's feels like the anti emoji. But working at Envato, they taught me about like the use of smileys. Like Collis Tade would always, who is the CEO, he would always do it. He got me into the smiley with the nose. Like, you know, I used to just do it as like the colon and the bracket.
Oh, you got the other one where you'd use the like actual letters. Yeah. That's a word for it.
Yeah, that's old school.
Yeah, that's
like emoticon. Well, I saw actually Seth Godin has a book that he made that's all on the different, like this was the early 90s. Yeah. I bought a copy just to have, but it was the dictionary of emoticons. But he also has on the same page on his blog, he talks about don't use emojis in email.
Interesting. Well, a lot of the time they used to break so you'd see the code of what the emoji was. Mm. Now most devices and stuff are actually showing up there.
Well, Mr. 97 doesn't see all of ours. You don't see the celebration.
No, on Android they've got a different emoji set. Mm. So it just ends up with like a box with a cross.
Yeah.
Which is good cut
through. That's on purpose, mate. You're out. You're fucking out. It's the Android.
What's the deal?
It was actually a bloke who created them, a Japanese interface designer. So it wasn't actually a company who created the first set.
Oh, so really? Like an individual. Artist or something.
Amazing. Yeah.
So the Japanese are great because they made a Line, which is a communication app, they made like $21 million just selling stickers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like stickers as in like visual, like virtual.
And did you see it everywhere? Like my virtual assistants, there's like, String, you're amazing.
I saw that on Telegram where when I would put an emoji, it would then replace it with a sticker.
Yes. And I've seen that.
And so then all of a sudden, but I've got friends who get right into the GIFs. Yep. And like my girlfriend Brie gets right into like she's got a group like a message thing for her work, and it just becomes this string of.
I love how you use
string. Yeah, exactly. I use string. As I said, I was like string. a string of
gifts. Replying with gifts. Yeah. It's awesome.
So you guys should do like your own GIF sets.
Yes, we want to. On Giphy, right?
Yeah. You know, you could download Giphy Cam and create your own. Giphy Cam is like, it's owned by Giphy. Uh-huh. And you could like actually do whole like your whole lot of like Giphy things.
Oh, that's cool.
And then use the standards one is, hi, thank you so much, I love you.
Oh, that's great. And can you do, I'm guessing you probably could do like green screen, like you could even get like green cut screen. Out sort yeah, of stuff.
Now you're getting, just do the basics and yeah, then you're on to things.
We are a production company, we need to make sure that we're hitting it.
So that's like a lot of things like a lot of people don't leverage. And the trick is like, how do you get it so then when people search, when they say thank you, that you're on the top of the thank you thing. Yeah. So, because like, you know, you just want to be the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the trick that you need.
Well, it's like on Instagram, you can find Gary V ones, can't you? Like he's.
And that's through the GIF. I never know if it's a soft G or a hard G. Jiffy. I'll say Jiffy because I feel like you have more.
A GIF, GIF, the same thing. People get upset with me.
Well, the Giphy, I say Giphy, I think. But the to get onto the Instagram stuff from the research I've done, you need to be part of their partner program because it used to be open and then they're like, oh, too many people are racist. And so you end up with all of these like...
I'm not surprised.
Super... like, so they had to cut it down. So now you have to be a Giphy partner to then be allowed into the like the API to put on Instagram and stuff like that.
So speaking of which, visuals. Mm-hmm. So we went on to that. Like my boyfriend says like, String, you need to be a meme in life.
Yeah.
So when like you become a meme, that's when you know you're famous.
Yeah.
So you guys should
unless
be
unless
like,
it's a good point.
What's well, some examples of someone meme. Becoming a meme?
Gary Vee is a meme, isn't he?
Egg Boy?
Egg Boy, yeah, that's definitely a meme.
So you guys, let's do a challenge. Yeah. Like, okay. Like we, one of us has to be a meme in life.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've, I don't.
You reckon he is? Yeah. Why do you think that is, Lisa?
Just my outrageousness.
Episode 14.
Episode 14. Yeah.
Well,
what's happening in episode 14? Oh,
you have episode 14. You'd have to listen.
Well, we did this radical honesty thing, and so
Josh
I just like
told something.
Told like a personal secret or whatever, which people have really stuck. Like it's really stuck, and now it's become
a
bit of a thing.
Do you think the intention to become a meme versus just being you and becoming a meme are two different things? Like it won't happen if you're trying to become one.
I don't know, man. I think eventually. If I'm set the course, you have to plant seeds. Like, I'm more strategic. I just plant lots of seeds and see which one sticks.
Mm. Okay, so you're not, okay, no, that makes sense. But if you were to become a meme of a byproduct of one of the seeds you created, then that would be natural.
Yeah, I want, like, for example, I should do a fried chicken rap song.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something in, so you can have an intention to do it. Because, like, Tommy, I think the reason Tommy is the least likely is because. I feel like TJ's like you're more conservative in regards to your brand. Well, it's like it's more you're more not protective, but you're.
But
not
what is a meme though? Let's discuss that because you could say that me fishing bikes out of the Yarra becomes a meme.
Absolutely.
Well, so that's like is a, doing that's a, something stupid.
He had a viral video on O-Bike, so I think
it's like you. Yeah. I know that.
Real cut through. But I remember the V's, right? I remember Vogue. I remembered Vogue.
Yeah.
Please tell me if you saw it.
I did. Like when you triggered, that's a trigger memory. Yeah. But I didn't even know that was
triggered in a good way. Tommy triggers a lot of people. Yeah. but that's definitely there's definitely a thing where
so it's meme worthy.
Like, yeah,
it is like, and you bring it up, everyone will like, I remember you. Mm. But then sometimes, like, what happens is like you became a meme, and then it has its life of its own.
Yeah,
and people will use it for different contexts.
Mm, mm.
So that's what I realized.
He also did a 7-Eleven coffee sting where he worked out that you could fit. A $2 7-Eleven coffee in a $1 cup.
Yeah.
That was also.
He that's a growth hack, open. Man. Yeah. That's a life hack.
Yeah. But he ended up on the project for that.
Yeah.
So he's,
But you see how these things do. And it's, it might come from something. It could come from something that you end up wanting to be serious. And then it's like, takes on a life of its own in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Have you ever created something or done something where you didn't want it to get the traction that it did, but it did?
Well, like I kind of like laugh at those moments because the whole point is like you don't have control. And see, I guess like I had the creative like lack of creative control because I just like do lots of things and set the intentions. And I think intentions is really important because that would kind of like help the universe control the narrative of things.
Mm.
And so but that's probably why I wanted to go online because I realized that the traditional path of the 9-to-5 didn't suit me because every time I go up, I notice like there's some barriers that want to squish me or mm-hmm. like push me down a lot. Yeah. So I realized like I'm better off going on the internet and creating my own path.
Yeah. So we got visuals. What are the the other V's?
Validate voice. Mm-hmm. So what are your key messages out there? Like your tone of voice. Mm-hmm. Like you guys have it. Like you know, Larrikins, chilled. Kind of hipsterish.
God, we were going for conservative, well-groomed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, crisp white t-shirts. Yeah.
No, I think that is, and what you explained is essentially what we are at heart, just a bunch of cheeky blokes having a bit of fun that love, you know, complex things but silly shit.
Yeah. Mm. So like shits and giggles.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I vibe with you guys already because I came in and was like, yeah, I could like talk shit with these guys.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like the – if you're being your true self – becomes a lot easier. Mm. I don't think we could do, you know, 300 odd episodes if we were like doing a persona as well.
Well, you can't, that's like, do you want to be a person or a personality?
Yeah.
Which is sustainable.
Yeah.
The person.
Yeah, yeah.
The person.
And so so there's a voice, then what's after voice?
Then validation. What are they, like, you know, marketers, we have to be KPIs.
Yeah.
What are your goals? But people, when you go visions, you need to like break down your what you want to achieve, and you doing the show is like a validation, kind of like this is what we need to like achieve. Mm-hmm. So you put your goals in there as well, and the last one is victory. It's like make money. Yeah. How do you make money on this? If you want to like be a sustainable content creator or thought leader or whatever you want to be, you have to make sure that you make a business out of it as well.
Those two V's, I feel like, are the hardest for most people: the validation and the victory.
Yeah, validation because a lot of people don't think big picture enough and they always confuse the vision with a goal.
Yeah.
And so they don't realize that their goal is short-term thinking.
Mm.
And a lot of times, like what I realize is like a lot of times people only think 3 months ahead, not even 10 years ahead.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, that's part of our whole thing is it's like the long game of doing it, like saying we're doing this for at least 10 years. It gives us the opportunity of like we don't have to feel like we're leveraging everything now. We don't have to like squeeze everything. We can actually just, you know, iterate and develop.
I think also sometimes say if you don't have it all mapped out, it's too overwhelming to sort of think about this hot vision.
Mm.
The short-term goals actually help you see a vision.
Yeah.
Ah, it's working this way.
Yep. Well, along the way, I'm not saying – I just happened to be the person like only – I had 10 years to think about things.
Yeah.
But it kept on like moving towards – every time I'd go the opposite of creativity, my life goes to shits.
Mm.
Yeah. So I realized like creativity is like the core ethos of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's your North Star.
Yeah, that's my North Star. And what I've like done is like video has always been something that I'm like gravitate towards. And I always have hypergrowth when I focus on video.
Mm.
So like whenever time – and I have to go to America. Like think of this. You have to go to America or go outside of Australia to get recognition.
Yeah.
How like ironic and stupid is that? That we have to like to pop the tour poppy syndrome. We have to go outside of Australia to get recognised even in our own country.
Do you find that there are a lot of limiting beliefs that are applied to you through the Australian community?
Well, like I think what happened was like I had to break my own limiting belief because other people kept on like pushing me up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm quite thankful for the champions that like backed me up along the way.
And who was that?
So and what was your limiting belief?
Oh, well, it was like I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like let's talk about Meerkat because that was like a really foundational point in my life. The people that I met there were the communities that I continue to talk to from this day on. And one of them like became almost like a patron, you know, like someone like a creative person, an artist person, like got backed by someone else. And he's always like backed founders.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to live in the most expensive city, San Francisco,
in
a and he like helped, like it's almost like a entrepreneur residence or something like that.
Wow.
So I get to hang out for 6 months, and then I got to hang out with all the amazing geeks because, like you know, San Francisco and Silicon Valley is like tech nerds. And I was able to have conversations with every one of them.
And so expensive though as well. Like living there is crazy. It seems like that sort of patronage sort of model is something that there is, like it's happened for Simon Sinek. I remember hearing him talk about how it's been, you know, for years and hundreds of years it's been a thing where artists have been supported by financial backers. Mm. But there is like Patreon.
Yeah, I was thinking of Patreon as well.
Yeah, I mean, what's your vibe on Patreon?
Well, like my same mentor says, like, Shring, let's go like ruin your brand.
by doing that, by asking for help.
Because, like, the direction I'm going is, like, he knows the direction I'm going is to help more, like, professionals. And professionals don't really hang out on Patreon.
Yeah. So it's such a hard – I think Patreon – there's a select audience that it's good for.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anyone in Australia making over $1,000 a month on it. Yeah. It's like the amount of energy that they're putting into it. It feels like it's a lot of
what it's
asking.
Done is like, I feel like it's unconsciously pushing people down because it's like putting, because the framework already and the use cases already is like very small, like $1, $5. Yeah. $1 is not great because it's I'm going into the financial things. It's like that's like your credit card or like your fees of PayPal already.
Yeah.
So you need like 1 million, you know, $1 to get $1,000. But there's a lot of fees along the way.
The anchoring seems wrong, right? Yeah. It's like you're being anchored in this like versus like what would it look like if someone was to give $1,000. If you had like 8 supporters giving you $1,000 or whatever, and you were able to, I guess there's a mix match of. I could imagine like the future being in this mix of that sort of patronage versus retainers and like great clients.
Yeah. I had a massive argument with my capitalistic American friends about
where do those arguments happen, by the way?
Like Starbucks. In the bars.
Starbucks.
No way, Starbucks. In bars. I'm going to be real here.
So you're pissed, you're 4 whiskeys in.
Yeah,
and you're yelling at each other.
Like it was in Sydney and I told them, it's like, oh, you know, we can't have single malt whiskies after 11 p.m. because they're going to make you drink something with it. It's like, don't ruin a single malt.
I see.
Yeah, but we
it's
had
lost like on the guy that's never
drank.
Don't ruin it. I had a biggest argument with my uncle. I was like, mate, can I have some bourbon? He's like, yeah, sure. And then he sees me pouring Coke into it. He's like,
oh, no.
He's like, nah. Go off.
Well, that's like with our mocha master at home, which is drip coffee, and Brie bought milk and she's been putting milk in it. I think that's absurd.
Yeah. I used to do that.
Can you is that allowed? Is that even a thing?
I told you that place we went to, they were like, no, we're not going to do that. So it's like.
But in a drip coffee, I don't even think that it like it sort of curdles or whatever.
So this is my thing about like, you know, do we have I don't know if we recorded it, but Australia's incredibly bougie when it comes to coffee, as you can tell by these two guys.
Yeah. I mean, what's your like? So the argument that you had
was like, thanks for following up on that. Well, because you know how Buffer was one a decentralized thing, and they send out all the money of like everyone's paycheck.
Who's that? Buffer. Okay.
So what they did was like they just made an open transparency. Is like this is how much everyone's getting paid.
Yeah.
And you know to say this is like the standard or roughly the standard. And I was saying it being because like creatives and freelancers and artists, what they do is they always seem to undercut themselves or don't know where to position themselves in terms of like hourly rate cost and things like that, right? And I was like, wouldn't it be awesome if we like help them with standardizing the hourly rates or something like that? And they're like, no, don't do that.
Well, I think that like we were talking about that just last week around what happens when you start being more open and transparent with salaries. There's two sides of the coin. One side is that it's great for things like diversity in the workplace and having a fair go for people because it means that we're being transparent. The other side of it is the intangible things that people are bringing to businesses. So it's like, for instance, say with you, your Meerkat experience might have a higher value for one business, but you are positioned with someone who's got the same LinkedIn following or whatever, and they want to they end up paying you more because it's like from this thing here. And so I think that's like money is a very complicated thing. I think what you're talking about makes so much sense, which is like the artists, like as the artists, we devalue it. Like so many of us devalue.
But then I think it's also because like they're never taught to think about business. But we have to now because every creative person is an entrepreneur now. And that's the future of work.
Yeah.
Like we're actually in the position of like training because a lot of like corporate people are sheep mentality people who want to escape the 9-to-5 job but they don't know how to get out of it.
What do you think about like free work, doing work for free? I saw something online where I think it was a woman in tech talking about like not working for free and I charge this much and all that sort of thing. And I understood that to a certain degree, but I also felt like it's a limiting belief or limiting opportunities, and it actually is going to hinder people who are at the early stages of their career, where it's like, no, you actually do, like, we do have to work for free, and that's how you build up the stuff. And so if you're like, no, I'm worth something, is that actually positive or negative to pay gaps? Or,
well, you know? I worked for free.
Yeah.
Like when I started out to build up my reputation and my systems and stuff like that. And if anything, like I feel like everyone has to go through that, because you want to know who has that mindset, right? Mm. Who has the perseverance and the ability to persist. Mm-hmm. Because that's like a, for me, that's like a really strong requirement for when I hire an intern, for example, is like, do they have that kind of ability?
Mm. Yeah, I think that it's like completely underestimated that. And I think there's probably like we see overcorrections in everything. And so I think that people probably realize it's like it's nice to be able to charge. But if you're at home, if you're not doing anything versus going out and having skin in the game and getting experience.
At what point though is the time that you say we don't do anything for free anymore?
Well, you just start charging people.
Yeah. I think it's based on market, right? Yeah. It's like if when people start wanting to pay and it's like I've only got a certain amount of time.
Yeah, but you also have a deadline. So I always say like 6 months of portfolio, whatever. Just give yourself a deadline and then start like trickling in and increasing your prices or putting a price down and see how many like actually bite. So that's your market value there.
Yeah. And so the San Francisco experience that you had, so were you saying it was 6 months you were in SF? Yeah,
and then since then, like he continues to support me because he has a history of on his actual, what's the thing where it's a stairway, like the thing?
Yeah.
I have my name is like along with Product Hunt.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and there are a few other people there as well. So he's like actually investing in me because he thinks I have founder capabilities.
Right. So it's like an angel investor, because they talk about like VCs and angel investors, products are one thing, but where it lies is the people, right?
The founders, right.
Yeah.
And so financially he supports you in that.
Just like he just gave me his space. Like
amazing. Well, can we have his number? It's is he in a good spot?
Well, I mean,
super good spot.
Yeah. And so when it comes to business deals, what has that journey been like? How do you know what to ask for?
Well, it's not like I actually refused multiple times because I didn't think he was like, I was like, is this for real? There must be some kind of catch. But he did it as a general laugh. If anything, I find that my best champions are dads, because they want to make sure that there's like their daughters have someone to look up to. And it's like, it's not a shit world that we live in.
Mm. That's great.
It's such a small investment for these one percenters that have so much,
yeah,
which is amazing.
Well, you have a choice, right? Like I think that even with what we do with our business, it's about like how can we want to get to the point of success, not for ourselves, but so then we can like share it and we can invest in other people as well. So it ends up bringing up everyone.
Yes. And I think that's what it's like. There's sometimes like the dark side of LinkedIn as a content creator. It's like I notice people are pushing people down.
That's a great headline, by the way, the dark side of LinkedIn.
And how are they doing this? What's that look like?
They're unfollowing me.
Sending you nasty gifts.
Oh, they're jokes. Like they're unfollowing me, or they like chop the cold the list, and that was one of them. And I wasn't really upset about it because they probably see me as a competitor. But I'm just like, oh, okay, I wish you'd said something to me. But it was very high school like. And a lot of people would like get upset that I have access to, like I have LinkedIn Live now. And I'm probably one of few Australians again to have access to it.
So what happens? What is that? Just like a live streaming like Facebook does?
Yes, yeah. And I have access to that and I push out content on it. But it doesn't seem to hit the algorithm at the moment. So for me, I'm just like testing it out to see when it like has that boost.
So are they actually, so within the app, could I even see that right now? As it, what about like as a consumer of that live content?
It's still, you can watch it.
Yeah, I can watch it.
So it comes up as live.
Yeah, it comes out live and like, and it's post-fusion is not bad actually. But seeing that like, you know, LinkedIn is not, because it's a feed experience, it's not like people don't get trained to like stay there for an hour. Whereas like on YouTube, you could like leave it on a different tab and you could like go and like hang out on there. LinkedIn doesn't have that experience yet because it's a very much a feed experience.
Interesting.
And when you feed experience, like all your content gets pushed down.
Yeah.
So it's not suited for LinkedIn Live or long form content at the moment.
If the people who are using LinkedIn actually spent hours, there'd be nothing done around the world. Businesses would be
actually useless. A lot of people like do hang out on there because I get a lot of like inbound and people have conversations with me because that's like a point of contact for me. So I leave it open, and I just want to see what kind of like things come my way.
I asked because I like some of the videos that have done well on LinkedIn for me, I end up getting a bunch of inbound stuff. Small fish compared to what you would have, but I asked
Jules Lund
if I could just have his phone for a second and go through his LinkedIn inbox, the stuff that he hadn't opened. My God, like hundreds and hundreds of people inbound, but half of them was so cringe. Is there a way, or what have you identified from your inbound, the stuff that's resonated?
Anyone who froze fried chicken.
Yeah, okay, so it's fried chicken. So if you want in.
It is actually. That's but what great, is it for you? But I think that's a great mechanism, right, to see whether people are serious. Having these sort of short filters where it's like, okay, we know. It's like with our show, we have in jokes that if we know that people bring up, there's a certain level of buy-in and you could almost understand where they fit in the communication funnel based on how they communicate with
and
you.
So that's like, because like I realize I'm getting all these inbound and they're terrible and I screenshot them because I want to like do a whole video around it. But I think the biggest one is like using the fried chicken saved me so much time because like they're generally like really buy into my stuff already. So that I already know within the communication journey that they're already part of my tribe.
Yeah.
So I did that, and like a lot of people should have more in jokes, and you should have more, like the fact that you have more in jokes will like people will come to you and share that in jokes. So you might not know their name, but you know that they get it.
Yeah.
It's like a language. You're building out like a language, right? Which it's almost extending the voice beyond yourself and saying, okay, like this is a voice that we use as a community. Like in radio, they talk about benchmarks. So it's something that, you know, it's like segments. So with Hamish and Andy, they used to do something called Fred Bassett or whatever. And so these things
Fridays? Was
every Friday? Yeah. Or you look at things like we do Fat Fridays here. And so on a Friday, when people are eating shit food, they're like,
fried chicken is
just It's like, absolutely.
We haven't done fried chicken. We should definitely do that.
See what I did there?
Yeah, exactly. I was watching Hot Ones over the weekend.
Hot Wings and Hot Ones. Yeah,
that was outrageous. I watched the Gordon Ramsay one.
That would be good. I'd love to see him.
Well, because he's a big baby. Yeah, couldn't handle it. Do you like spice?
I could handle it. Mm-hmm. I could handle it. Along the way, like you want to use these little signals because that's how I get a lot of like, I just cut through the crap that happens and
Command
stuff.
F, fried chicken.
Yeah.
And what were we talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about the voice, those visual, the voice stuff. So it's like the language that we have. And so you've gotten good to the point where it's like you can identify quickly. You can, based on signals, can say this person has buy-in.
And I think that's really awesome because like I did that and that's why I push fried chicken even more now because then
– You have to have a fried chicken brand at some point.
Have you got merch yet?
Yeah, I have. But I haven't pushed that out because I want to – on my roadmap is like doing a fried chicken party brand.
Amazing.
That'll be good. So you said the last one, so it's victory.
Yeah.
Money doesn't always mean victory.
No, I'm glad that you pointed that out. But for creative people, I need to drum that into them that for you to be sustainable in your career, you need to have some kind of cash flow so then you don't – because, you know, like creativity diminishes if you increase your stress level, right?
Yes.
So money should not be – like money should be an easy pathway for a lot of people. Once they know their budget, their creativity actually increases if they don't have to worry about like housing and foods and stuff like that as well. So what I notice is like – as soon as one of my stresses go away, my creativity goes up.
Yeah.
And my sister says, like, you stress a lot. It must be a creative thing.
Have you set, like, an amount? Because I think that's where when you haven't worked it out, like my wife and I did our budget last night. And once you know it, it's like, oh, fuck, there's $4,000 extra a month that is cool to do something with. Like,
but
whatever.
It's so hard, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, we're not taught this. And if you have to think about it, like personal finance is one of my goals this year. And I realized like
Barefoot Investor.
Yeah, I read that book too. Yeah. And that my mum was like not a person to refer to. And I learned her habits, like personal finance habits, from her. Like she grew like pretty much scavenged hard and was resourceful, but she spent it really fast because like it goes to like schools, food and things like that. You know, five kids, pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And so I learned that like a lot of my habits of like just like when I got money, I spent it. I was like, it was from her. So she never taught us the basic thing where it's like, you know, put away 20% or 10% into another bank and don't look at it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I mean, automate that.
Yeah.
Most of our parents are doing the best with what they've got, the knowledge they have. Mm. And so it is like when you look at it and put it down. And so we reduce the stress by taking into account what our budget is and then ramping up the creativity. Is there a point where you go, okay, I've built a following, and there's an X amount of time that I'm going to allow myself before I need to start seeing some dollars. You know, like you build an influence. I think that's what a lot of people have done. Early days of Instagram, maybe early days of YouTube, they build these followings. Mm-hmm. And they're not making any money, but
I have.
Yeah.
I created these packages, like it's a couple of grand.
Mm-hmm.
And I just need to, but I have to like, what I did was like I tested out the packages styles and then sent it off to people, because when they asked me to do these packages, I made it very pretty and everything like that, professional and things. So they know that I'm professional as well, and then follow up with like a proposal so they could sign it off as well. So like
back-end for your services. Yeah.
Back-end wise, like I've like they didn't expect that. So I realized like the basic influencer probably is disorganized, not business orientated.
Mm.
So me just like stepping up and being business orientated will like get you a lot of inbound and stuff. So like I did a Wix one and they gave me two inbounds.
Yeah.
So the more portfolio you get in terms of like these global brands, you just go build up a portfolio of things. Mm. But you need to step up the back end, because creative people has like a reputation of being business, non-business like.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely an advantage of merging, you know, being a hybrid. Last week you announced a more sort of formal relationship with Shootstar.
Yep.
What's the conversation like when you're doing something like that? Are you still positioning yourself as an artist that's doing creative work, or is there sales components?
Well, no, I'm just like lead gen for them.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that, right? Yeah. If anything, I built that like that partnership or that conversation or my relationship with them started 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when you want to be like a video evangelist and stuff like that, or evangelist or a brand ambassador, it's not going to be one of those one where it's going to happen overnight. It's one of those one where you have to set out and build up relationships, because those are the key brands that you want to align your brand and values with as well. And they happen to align with my values a lot and my vision a lot as well. And so like every month I hang out with them like a retainer, but I act as almost like a team and promote them.
And do you find that the first conversation – did you bring like a deck to them and saying, hey,
no,
this is what I'm
thinking? No, I was so disorganized. But I think over time, now, like if I had to look in hindsight, like I became more organized.
Mm-hmm.
But with them, like they just kept on backing me up.
Yeah.
I loved them. They're super champions of mine. If anything, I became more business orientated because I was associated with them, and they taught me things unconsciously as well.
Yeah.
How do you network without being gross? Because I feel like there's a sense that networking, the old style, comes with this like.
Do I seem like I'm business, right?
Yeah. You're not gross. Well,
I think that the thing is like you're bringing creativity and content and personality, and so there is the gross end of the spectrum. Like we've done SEO work, so when people type in video production company, they see our brands or whatever, and that gets a certain type of person where it's like to whom it may concern, or the stuff that's very transactional, where it's like, hey, I need a job or I want this thing versus this is how I'm going to bring value.
I'm using myself as an example because I'm like the opposite, because like instead of like I don't even do outbound.
Yeah.
It's all inbound. 90% at a time. 10% of the time I'm just like hyper targeted of who I want to be like associated with. So I start building those relationships really early. So I play the long game, I guess. I know how to do it in a way that's like not gross, because networking for me means like building relationships.
What about the other side? Because you do get so much inbound, I guess you get that knowledge of what is good and
what is bad.
What's bad? What's the commonality of a good, inbound communication versus a bad one?
Outside of the fried chicken emoji.
Okay, a good one kind of says like acknowledges what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
and find a commonality of interests. A bad one feels like a cut and copy paste.
Yeah.
Or you feel like you're talking to a sleazy salesman. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's all about the vibes that you bring in.
Yeah.
So that's what I say.
And LinkedIn as a community, has it changed much since video has started, do you think?
I never hanged out on LinkedIn 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's like old school. But because they're changing from, I feel like LinkedIn, as much as I love them, they're like 10 years behind in terms of content and social media.
Mm.
And they only started adding like the feed experience and becoming more content driven because that's when they realize that's what making it sticky. So they're moving towards a media company now.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, the good thing about it is that you know what everyone's kind of there for. It's all work related. It's
business,
all
right? And business. But like, that's what I mean. Like, people know that I talk about business.
Yeah. I think that's hard when you're on Instagram and then you start spruiking business and they're like, where's the fried chicken photos? Yeah.
Well, it's good for B2C, I guess, Instagram.
Yeah, definitely.
But LinkedIn, I think definitely, I probably see, like I'm on LinkedIn, I'm not really on Instagram anymore, but LinkedIn, I took some time away and I saw how powerful, like I started getting LinkedIn recommendations when I was, you know, 21 or whatever. And so I've got, you know, 30-odd recommendations from people who have gone on to work at massive companies who have, you know, founded their own. And I found that to be amazing social proof. I think a lot of people with LinkedIn tend to only use it when they're looking for a job.
Yeah. But it's changed now, right? Yeah. I use it as like a more of a
always on.
I'm like an expert in the video space.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of like gave me the ammunition and the framework to build up community. And I realized there's like an opportunity gap where there's a lot of people that they want to create. So I created a startup, which is like a Toastmasters for video.
Oh, cool.
Where video, like professionals are super, it's like almost similar to Toastmasters and speaking, right?
Mm.
Public speaking. People are super scared of like being in front of crowds.
Yeah.
Or how they present themselves, because professionals is all about the face, right? Mm. Or the professionalism, but they want to be authentic as well. So I created Master Your Video, which allows like professionals to be better communicators and future-proof their communications.
Mm. We're in the boom of personal brands, and I think more.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's the job scope for the future, what the future of work looks like, and I think there's more emphasis on people's personal brands and people as individuals focusing on themselves as a business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is great that we can take lessons from companies that are huge, McDonald's, all the things that have built this amazing branding experience that you can apply to yourself.
Yeah.
And those touch points, and like you're saying, you're one of the people leading this personal brand. What are the stickiness? You know, what's the vision, actually looking at yourself as a potential business, and what's the business model of that business?
Because then people will back up with you if you think far ahead. It's like, yeah, because businesses, bigger the business is, like they think very long term.
Yeah.
So you want to be associated with the long term thinking because they want to associate with you as a brand. So if you want to go and become like a brand ambassador, you have to think like a long term thinker.
Mm. And people want to follow other people as well.
Yeah, yeah, business wise, it's all about people at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's why starting a business page is super hard. You know, like the not driven by a person because the connection's hard to make.
Yeah. And at the moment, like, unfortunately, LinkedIn doesn't, you know, you could boost views and stuff. All the LinkedIn profiles is all organic.
Mm-hmm.
Not because you can't even boost those ads or views and like boost videos and anything like that. So it's all organic at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I think that LinkedIn is probably where Facebook was in like 2013 or whatever, where it's just
so
like.
So long.
Yeah. It's like there is that opportunity where it feels like the tap's on and you can get like a lot of views organically. Do you think, based on your sort of insider knowledge and your relationship with LinkedIn, do you think they're just going to become a very sort of switched on algorithm that turns that tap on and off?
Well, it's a massive beast at the moment because it's such an old platform.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're moving towards like a Facebook because I see a lot of like similarities between Facebook and LinkedIn as well.
Yeah. And they also bought up lynda.com.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. They bought it LinkedIn Learning.
Yeah. And so I think like there's definitely something there where it's like they're combining education and controlling or, you know, being a part of the whole career journey. If they can help you learn video when you're like 15 and you have an account and all that sort of thing, imagine what that looks like in 10 or 15 years.
The in terms of your nimbleness to a platform, or your, I guess, what is it?
Agility.
Yeah, to the platform. Are you willing to leave LinkedIn, you know, if it's if there's something that you think is going to be better? Like,
Meerkat was like a valuable lesson in terms of distribution. So I already like diversifying and putting my videos up onto YouTube because it's better SEO at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the like being platform agnostic has its advantages, but I think that you're a great example of if you can pick a platform and you can be first to it, you can then use that to leverage and to then, you know, spread far.
My content hasn't changed that much.
Yeah.
If anything, it's just like more focused now because of the 7Vs and stuff. So people know my messages and my values.
Yeah.
So that means like it could help me be consistent with my messaging on all the social platforms. And when, but then like I've noticed like someone found me on Sydney Airport and she thought I was bubbly and things. I was like, man, I was fucking tired.
Oh, she found you in the airport.
Yeah.
It's like, string.
Yeah.
String. And you got hit by a piece of fried chicken. Don't have to take that literally.
Yeah. I'm excited for like following you on YouTube. I think for me, from a platform point of view, I just like that it's all the videos there.
Yeah,
LinkedIn is great. I think that the thing is that it's like I don't always have a sense I'm seeing all of someone's content.
Yeah, the
I'm
just getting, stuff, yeah.
I'm literally getting your content currently based on whatever it delivers to me.
Yeah, I'm pushing. I realize like people still like my writing, and I'm doing more writing because it's just better thinking sometimes, and it's more. So I'm embedding my videos into video articles as well. But I realize like I should start like promoting my website more just in case, because your website is your digital castle at the end of the day.
Yeah. What's that empire building? Yeah. Right? What is what's your website?
Stringstory.co.
Yeah. So is that the string story? Have you sort of wanted to ever lean more on a business brand versus your own personal one, or have you always felt the importance of that personal?
Well, Stringstory.co like started 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Stringstory is like just like a an art project, and I just happen to like own all of the social media assets of it, and then people kept on calling me String afterwards, and then it became a thing.
Amazing. That's so funny. We would love to have you back on for a Fat Fridays and do fried chicken.
So this is what I love that already. Yes, of course I go say yes.
Yeah.
Well, and where would we get it from if we were going to get fried chicken?
There's like around the corner. Oh, wait, you're not going to be around.
We're going to be Abbotsford. Yeah. So near Victoria Street, surely there's a bunch of like Korean barbecue. Well,
they're Vietnamese and like down there.
Yeah, they're Vietnamese and Koreans are there as well. Like just trust me, there's fried chicken there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get fried chicken delivered somehow.
Can we,
Uber Eats it. Don't worry.
We can do like the hot sourcing too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want to like do like the after seeing all the video.
You like
I reckon I could handle it. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, I like hot, but I like to eat.
It gets medium at Nando's.
Well, I think a good hot doesn't just blow your mouth open for hours. Like I think a good, nice sauce like adds to the flavour and doesn't ruin it.
So he doesn't like it hot is what he's
saying. No, I love it. Every time.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it.
Are you ready for it? Are you ready for a hot wing or hot fried chicken?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay,
I'll do it.
But the Bell's hot chicken, they're more sort of like a powdery hot.
Yeah, I'm not a... Some,
it gets my throat.
Full on. Oh, look. I think... have you ever tried Hot Stars fried chicken?
No.
Hot Stars.
It's like...
It's in the city or something?
Yeah, it's like...
Did Mr. 97 just react to
that? Is that the one with blue branding?
Yeah.
It's the blue is like sick.
And what it is like instead of the kebab late at night, you have a like this massive fried chicken that's flattened out and it's like big as my head.
Yeah,
and you just eat it.
And are you a bones girl or no bones?
Bones make it juicy.
Okay,
but I do sometimes like if you want ease of use, I have to say eating fried chicken on video is ugly as.
Well, there's ugly. Well, that's what's so funny about like the whole Hot Ones YouTube thing. You've got these celebrities though. And they're like, but I'm a boneless kind of guy just because I like speed and I just don't want to get fucking the bones in the way.
But that's like
a starving kind of bloke.
Yeah, I guess one of the live streaming ones is like, it's called mukbang, where you eat in real time.
Yeah.
They have like a whole bunch of food around them and people get paid them just to eat in real time.
Wow.
Or Hulk smash food he gets into. Oh, yeah. All that.
It's a bit weird. I've got no interest in watching anyone.
No, I like it.
That's like a big thing, a phenomenon that started all in Korea. And then like people love it.
What's the term when you hear people eating? you like the sound of it.
ASMR.
ASMR. Audio sensory something something.
If they want that, they just have to go to the latest Fat Fridays episodes of me eating. String, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's a Daily Talk Show. Hi at thedailytalkshow.com if you want to send us an email. Otherwise, we'll see you tomorrow.
See you guys.
Bye. Ciao.